Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 13th of March 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. It's got to be Brexit, hasn't it?
Well, I regret to say that it does have to be Brexit. And let's just remember what she said a couple of years ago. I will respect the will of the British people and I will make a success of Brexit. Does Brexit feel like a success to you, Brian?
No.
No, no. Well, let's have a look at how much of a success it was last night.
Order! Order!
The ayes to the right, 242. The noes to the left, 391.
The ayes to the right, 242. The noes to the left, 391. So the noes have it. The noes have it. Unlock.
Oh. I wouldn't have unlocked anything. I would have kept them locked in there. But anyway.
Well, Mike, I watched footage from inside Westminster and I feel, I'm not even sure what the word is, the
nausea?
Yeah, nausea, the childish behaviour, that's an insult to children, the way these people behave, it's madness.
Well, it got better.
Point of order, the Prime Minister.
Yeah! On a point of order, Mr. Speaker, I profoundly regret the decision that this House has taken tonight. I continue to believe that by far the best outcome is that the United Kingdom leaves the European Union in an orderly fashion with a deal. Yeah. And that the deal we've negotiated is the best and indeed the only deal available. Yeah. But Mr. Speaker, I would like to set out briefly how the government means to proceed. 2 weeks ago, I made a series of commitments from this dispatch box regarding the steps we would take in the event that this House rejected the deal on offer. I stand by those commitments in full. Therefore, tonight we will table a motion for debate tomorrow to test whether the House supports leaving the European Union without a deal on the 29th of March. The Leader of the House will shortly make an emergency business statement confirming the change to tomorrow's business. This is an issue of grave importance for the future of our country. Just like the referendum, there are strongly held and equally legitimate views on both sides. For that reason, I can confirm that this will be a free vote on this side of the House.
So a free vote on the Tory side of the House. Basically, she's totally out of control. She's lost control of the Tory party. And really, she's got no choice but to offer a free vote on the motion tonight. Now, what's important to note is that this motion tonight on the issue of a no-deal Brexit, which is likely to... The outcome is likely to be that the no-deal option comes off the table at that point. This is not a legally binding vote. So Theresa May, in her belligerence, could just go straight ahead and say, well, forget that, I'm proceeding anyway. Let's just briefly, Brian, look at what happens in the next little bit. So we've got this vote against the no-deal Brexit tonight. Then tomorrow there's a vote to extend the leave date, so past the 29th of March. What might have to happen after that? Well, the EU has already said that there would be no extension to the Brexit process without some kind of reason. So, you know, if tomorrow they vote to extend the 29th of March date, how long will it be for? Well, most people are saying a few months. But what could they hope to achieve in the next few months that they haven't achieved in the last 2 years? So the EU's position is, well, we're not going to allow that extension to take place under those circumstances. So you've got to come to us with other options. So what options might those be? Well, a second referendum is certainly another option, perhaps a general election. Many people suggesting that Theresa wouldn't last past June. I don't think she deserves to last past tonight. But I chose that graphic, by the way, because it looks like the UK is entering, the EU not leaving.
Driving a wedge.
I think that's exactly what's going to end up happening. We never actually came out, but we're certainly going back in.
Yeah. And many people are commenting on the fact that everything is becoming more and more chaotic. Certainly we're watching chaos in Westminster. We had a gentleman on the phone earlier this morning talking about the general chaos, also talking about constitutional issues. But the key thing about this is that this is orchestrated chaos. This hasn't just drifted out of nowhere. This is orchestrated chaos. We had Tories, Nick Bowles and Danny Kruger, warning us about 4 or 5 years ago that the Tories planned to introduce chaos into the public institutions. This was part of their policy agenda. We've had Common Purpose operating at the heart of the British government, boasting that there was to be a coalition formed, and did people have sufficient guile, deception, deceit. So all of this was known. And what are we seeing? We're seeing politics destroyed across the board, Labour Party destroyed, Conservatives. And meanwhile, we go into this morass with the European Union of Brexit without the exit.
Absolutely.
Planned.
Yes. I think it was Sky News this morning. He managed to track down the Cabbage Patch doll himself, David Cameron, coming out of his house, I think. Don't know what he was going to do, but anyway. He was also suggesting that perhaps there would be a no deal. The vote would deny a no deal Brexit tonight, and then there would be an extension of the Article 50 process. But he said, you know, you can't go on with a situation where people who want Brexit keep voting against it. And of course, the problem here is that Theresa May's version of Brexit isn't really Brexit. Most people recognise that now. And that's why the people who want Brexit keep voting against it. So we'll just come back onto this one and say that, you know, she's respecting the will of the people, and she will make a success of it, is what she said. I'm going to suggest that that, in fact, was fake news at the time. Now, of course, the major problem at the with all this is the Northern Irish border. Here is Northern Ireland, and the red line there is the border. Well, the question is, what happens next? Well, the government has issued a statement on what happens if there's a no deal, and how they keep this border open, because that's the whole point of this argument. And so what they're saying is that strictly temporarily there'll be a unilateral approach to checks, processes and tariffs in Northern Ireland in the event that the UK leaves without a deal. The approach is key to protecting the unique circumstances of Northern Ireland and avoiding a hard border. They say in no deal, the UK government is committed to entering discussions urgently with the EU and Irish governments to agree long-term measures. That the government is publishing this approach ahead of the vote in Parliament on no deal to ensure MPs are fully informed, and that the government has today confirmed a strictly temporary unilateral approach it would take to avoiding this border. So what are they saying? They're saying that to prevent unfair treatment of Northern Ireland, businesses, goods arriving from Ireland would still be subject to the same VAT and excise duty. They're saying that small businesses trading across the border and not currently VAT registered would have to report VAT online from time to time without any new processes at the border. They're saying that to protect human, animal and plant health, animals and animal products from countries outside the EU would need to enter Northern Ireland through a designated entry point. So it wouldn't be fully open border as it is at the moment, but this would only apply to stuff coming from outside the EU. And they're saying that plants and plant products from non-EU countries, which have not been previously checked by an EU member state, would also be checked at authorised inland trade premises. And they're saying that to fulfil essential international obligations, there would be new UK import requirements, such as checks on documents on or registration for a very limited set of goods. Now, this is causing problems for the manufacturing industry in particular, and they're concerned about this. So the lobby group Make UK has said that the tariff plan that the government announced today, which is related to this issue of the Northern Irish border, will still be decimating to the manufacturing sector as a whole. They're saying that while there's some protection for areas such as agricultural products and car imports, other areas of manufacturing would be hit hard. So that's where we're at. Another day and the same old mess continues. Now, I have to say, watching Jeremy Corbyn during Prime Minister's questions earlier, it seems to me that there's quite a number of people trying to take advantage of this situation, and many people would hold the view that he is right to do this. But if this is as critical an issue as everybody is suggesting, Corbyn's position seems to be that Theresa May really needs to step aside. There needs to be a general election, and he needs to be given the opportunity to become Prime Minister. So he's sort of, you know, in a sense, he is taking advantage of the situation for his party political ambitions. As I say, maybe he's within his rights to do that. I don't know.
Well, something's got to happen, but one of the key problems, Mike, is who do you choose to put the situation right? Because we're not seeing, we're not really seeing MPs stand up to be counted and coming out with common sense measures. We're just seeing fear, because we know that many MPs are just too frightened to speak out now because of the parliamentary machinery. Let's just switch to this. We're on the same subject, though, really. This is a big thank you to one of our viewers that sent in this little analysis of the Constitution. Now, I've just taken this at face value. I saw it first thing this morning. But to me, it seems to be that somebody is on absolutely the right lines, because we've got at the moment that if we lose our constitution, we lose our freedom. We heard a radio interviewer yesterday trying to claim that we didn't have a constitution. So the left of the page, basically, if things were working well, sovereignty would be held by us common people with common law. We would have the monarchy protecting that sovereignty, the House of Lords and Parliament. And on the right hand side of the piece of paper, everything's been turned on its head. We now have a parliament that is claiming sovereignty in order to lord it over everybody else, including the House of Lords. The monarch is simply told what pieces of paper to sign. And the point that this person makes is that the common people are absolutely at the bottom of the pile, being told what to do. So the final comment on the right here is, we the people need to hold the monarch, parliament, House of Lords and other organisations to account. If not, dictatorship is assured. And
that's a great little
It is good, actually.
It is
good, Mike. And somebody has taken a lot of trouble over this. We could have a very deep and detailed discussion about constitutional issues. But I think the key thing here is that somebody's tried to simplify this for other people to say, look, you've really got to start to understand what's going wrong in this country. David Scott has used the expression government of occupation. We have a government which is actually hostile to the British people. And of course, the scam over Brexit without the exit is part of that. Mm. So we're going to say well done to that gentleman. I'm also going to encourage people to get onto the UK column website, because Mike has put up a letter essentially by John Bingley. And I decided that it would be good to just take the key points here that John Bingley makes in analysing our constitution and what is going wrong at the moment. But he says that breach of sovereignty exists and must be remedied forthwith. There can be no standing army. Any solution must comply with international law. The subjects have a right of remedy in petition direct to the Crown to demand the enforcement of our constitutional law. Now, Mike, if we've got people claiming we don't have a constitution, then, of course, where is constitutional law? So this constitutional issue is so important. The laws are the birthright of the people. Parliament may not destroy its omnipotence and thereby displace that birthright to a foreign potentate. And this is a direct point to what's happening with the European Union claiming power within this country. He goes on to say the will of the people has been expressed. However, our written constitution and the rule of law also determine that elected politicians do not sit in parliament to place the monarch in breach of her sworn duty, sell out the birthright of the people to a foreign potentate, to cede any government to those who owe no allegiance to the crown, must be the European Union, to support ministers in contravention of their Privy Council oaths, to place the House of Lords in contempt of the Crown, to breach their own allegiance, to disobey the law, particularly the Bill of Rights, an act to secure the rights and liberties of the subject, to place others in breach of their constitutional duty to create taxation without representation, to separate the people from their courts, to devise a standing army. Parliament has no lawful power to destroy its own omnipotence. That is the law and a written part of our constitution. And finally, he says there can be no power in Parliament to continue any breach of sovereignty. It is the Crown's sworn duty to defend and recover it, and thus the duty of all in any governance whatsoever to repair the breach at the earliest time. Now, I understand, Mike, that this letter has caused quite some consternation in the higher levels of Westminster, because it's almost a tar baby. They're frightened to touch the letter with what it identifies and accuses them of. And if viewers and listeners would like to see this, then the article on the UK Column website is Brexit, the Constitutional Position. You can find it quite easily on the front page, but I've put the web address on screen. So if we look at the chaos in Westminster, this has been orchestrated. It is a planned attack on the Constitution of UK. And that excellent letter by John Bingley really sets out what needs to happen in order to take back and restore the proper constitutional position. I thought that was an excellent lead into the next one, where we see law breaking down in another case, Mike.
Yes, well, of course, on Friday and on Monday, we mentioned the case of Lynn Thayer. She had her extradition hearing in the Royal Courts of Justice yesterday in the Strand. I believe that 70, a little more than 70 people turned up for this. So thank you very much for anybody that did, because that's fantastic support for Lynn. Now, if you don't know the case, Lynn was is a scientist who was working with David Noakes to develop the process for manufacturing GC-MAF, which is a protein that is naturally produced by the body, but which has a very positive effect on the immune system, and was being used by people to help with cancer treatment and so on. Of course, that operation was shut down, and David Noakes is currently in prison for having been convicted of distributing an unlicensed medicine. This extradition hearing was of the French attempting to bring charges against Lynn. Now, Lynn Thayer had not faced any charges in the UK. The UK, the Crown Prosecution people decided that there was no case to answer for her. But nonetheless, the positive news is that the hearing went well yesterday. Ian Crane was there. If anybody wants to go and have a look at his report on his YouTube channel or Facebook, then do so. But after a very slow start, according to Ian, the barrister for Lynn found his feet. There was some very, basically, the impression I got was that the prosecution barrister's case fell apart pretty much. But nonetheless, there is, in about 2 weeks, and the date's to be confirmed, there's going to be a second hearing, a very short hearing. I believe it's only to be an hour on this, where the final judgment will be made. So Lynn still needs a little bit of support, and we'll keep you posted on what the date is for that. The other piece of news that came out yesterday really was that the barrister for the French side has made it absolutely clear that they intend to start extradition proceedings against David Noakes as soon as he gets out of prison, which I believe is likely to be later this month on a tag. But they're going to start going for him as well at this point. And certainly Lynn is of the view that, in fact, despite the pretty disgusting treatment that she's had over the last 2 years, that really David was probably the target for this the whole time.
Yeah, and I'll just add that I was able to speak to David yesterday. He is having an extremely hard time in prison. Apart from anything else, the prison itself grossly over capacity, so there's immense stress by the sheer number of people being held. He's locked up for 23 hours a day, and he's been given minimum medical care. He is being given medication, but he's not being allowed to actually have proper diagnosis, and is at the moment suffering a considerable amount of pain. What he would like to say is thank you very much to everybody that's written him letters and sent in envelopes and stamps. Those are badly needed because it's his only method of communication. He does hope to be out, I think it's on the 22nd of this month, but as yet the documents which mean that that would become reality have not been signed. So if you feel that you can write David a letter of support in prison in the remaining days, I know that he would appreciate that. Well, of course, what's the big issue in the background? Aside from Brexit, it's got to be that nasty Mr. Putin. And the Express here, with a truly astonishingly bad piece of journalism, World War III warning, US would be wiped out by Russia and China, reveal analysts. World War III simulations conducting by an American non-profit have revealed US forces would be completely wiped out when confronted with Chinese and Russian military. That would be a good headline if you wanted to increase American defence spending, Mike. So I took a little bit of a look into this article to see what was going on. And let's see what we find. Well, we find this. The RAND Corporation, who carried out the simulation, claimed US land, sea and air forces would be reduced to, quote, rubble in the outlandish scenario. Non-profit research organisation RAND Corporation reported the war game showed US armed forces facing substantial losses despite repeated attempts to overcome both Russia and China's military muscle. RAND analyst David Uchmanek said, in our games, when we fight Russia and China, the US gets its, I think they were saying, ask handed to it. So we've apparently got a non-profit. We're led to believe that this is independent research. What do I sense? That this is to ramp up public fear, and it's to try and get even more money pumped into the US defense budget. Why would I think that? Well, let's have a little look at RAND. So here is their website.
You'd hardly describe them as a non-profit. This would imply some little charity somewhere.
Well, we're going to get on to that, Mike. Here we are. History and mission. The RAND Corporation is a non-profit institution that helps improve policy and decision making through research and analysis. For seven decades, RAND has used rigorous fact-based research and analysis to help individuals, families and communities throughout the world be safer and more secure, healthier and more prosperous. So these are wonderful people, Mike. They have your interests and your family at heart.
I feel safer already.
So let's have a look. It says, there we are. As a non-partisan organisation, RAND is widely respected for operating independent of political and commercial pressures. Quality and objectivity are our two core values. So we're feeling very safe now. So let's see where it goes. RAND's research is commissioned by a global clientele that includes government agencies, foundations, colleges and universities and private sector firms. Philanthropic contributions combined with earnings from RAND's endowment and operations make possible the RAND Ventures program, which supports innovative research on issues that are crucial to policy debate, but that reach beyond the boundaries of traditional client funding. So they're basically working for people, Mike. And who would they be working for? Well, let's have a look. Here we are. US Department of Homeland Security, the US Air Force, the US Army, the US Department of Health and Human Services and related agencies, Office of the US Secretary of Defense, and other federal agencies, and on it goes, with a budget of $318.7 million. So this is the organisation that the Express would have us believe is an independent non-profit. Yeah. We had a look at the chief executive here. Here he is, Michael D. Rich. He's been in RAND more or less his whole life. I think he was born there, if you have a look at this CV. But he's also very involved with other things. So we've got he's into aid and education, International Institute for Strategic Studies, the Los Angeles World Affairs Council, Wise and Healthy Aging, Every Child Foundation, Santa Monica, UCLA Medical Center and Orthopedic Hospital, and the UCLA Foundation. He's also a member of the US Defence Science Board, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Californian Bar. I'm sure he's a very nice gentleman, but I think what we're actually looking at here is fake or planted news.
Yes.
And of course, it's being pushed straight out by the Express. I couldn't find anything on the journalist who produced this. I'll do a little more work on that so that we can see if we can pin him down. But fake news, planted news, misleading news, certainly.
Well, the UK Column certainly is a non-profit. I don't think we've ever really made a profit. And we certainly don't have a $300 million budget. So if you'd like to help us continue to do what you're doing, then please get onto the community website. That's ukcolumn.org/community. And you can support us there if you would like to. That would be much appreciated.
Yes. Now, advert, we've got more happening on 5G in Totnes, and that's a talk by Mark Steele. That's Saturday the 16th of March, 12 o'clock till 2 o'clock, £5 with some concessions. And of course, Mark Steele has been one of the most outspoken people on 5G, and he will be giving a very good presentation. I'll just add that I did notice that if we look at RAND, RAND has been pushing 5.9 gigahertz band for Wi-Fi. This is almost certainly a push for 5G. And if you want to know how good RAND is, it says almost all the defining features of the information age were shaped in part at RAND. Satellites, systems analysis, computing, and the internet. That's a pretty amazing claim. Shaping the world. Now, time to get emotional about trees. 5G, of course, has shown us that in order to get 5G coverage throughout the UK, we've got to cut down trees. I'd just like to say that we've got some of this going on close to the UK column. It's been tragic to watch woodlands cut down. Now, this is not in relation to 5G. This is in relation to a so-called road improvement programme. But if you want to look at absolute carnage and decimation of woodland, you can now see it happening in Plymouth to improve the roads, which in another 5 years, of course, will be at the same chaotic capacity and we won't be making any progress.
Correct.
I'll just add that if we go and have a look on the Plymouth City Council website, you'll find a lot of dialogue about the protection of the environment and trees. I'm going to say most of this is words, as is the case with other local authorities. And if you don't want to lose trees due to 5G, it's going to take a lot of people in this country to stand up and say, no, not in our name.
Now, to introduce the sort of next section, Boris Johnson was on LBC earlier. He was being asked about the spring budget, which is Philip Hammond is may have finished giving it by now, but it certainly was being delivered as we were starting the news programme. And he was being asked about policing and the amount of money that policing were and receiving and so on. And well, this is what he had to say.
Keeping numbers high on the streets is certainly important, but the question is where you spend the money and where you deploy the officers. And one comment I would make is I think an awful lot of money, an awful lot of police time now goes into these historic offences and all this malarkey and, you know, £60 million I saw was being spaffed up the wall on, you know, some investigation into historic child abuse and all this kind of thing. I mean, what on earth is that going to do to protect the public now?
So Boris complaining, in his words, that £60 million is being spaffed up the wall. Now, if anybody doesn't know what the word spaffed means, if you head over to the Urban Dictionary, urbandictionary.com, I believe you'll get a definition of it. And when you read
we'll
that...
warn people, it's not very pleasant.
Right, and when you read that definition, you may have some questions for Boris about why he would use that particular word in the same sentence as the words child abuse. Because I find that a pretty disturbing thing for him to say. But if we separate that from the general point about the abuse inquiry, and do you think that it's £60 million well spent?
Well, absolutely not, Mike. We've got money being thrown away because what's coming is a cover-up. And let's have a look at this. Reports coming out about what's happening with the ICSA, the so-called child abuse inquiry. These are two headlines from the Times. Questions for ex-MI5 boss over abuse MP. This was reported back on the 4th of March by the Times. Former spy chief will face public questioning about her connections with a Conservative MP who escaped investigation over child sex abuse allegations. Dame Eliza Manningham Buller is scheduled to appear before the Child Abuse Public Inquiry next week to be cross-examined about her contacts with Sir Peter Morrison, a close aide to Margaret Thatcher. It's thought to be the first time that a head or former head of MI5 will give evidence in the open session to a public inquiry. She'll be asked about the mid-1980s when, as a mid-ranking intelligence officer, she's understood to have reported information about Morrison, who died in 1995, to her superiors. Basically, what was happening is they knew he had a, quote, penchant for small boys, but this was considered to be more of a political embarrassment to the government and a greater security danger. But nobody wanted to do anything about it in a criminal sense. And the other one, again, a Times headline here, is Thatcher Minister Peter Morrison was KGB blackmail risk, child abuse inquiry told. One of Margaret Thatcher's closest political allies was dropped from a ministerial visit to Soviet Russia because of his penchant for small boys, made him vulnerable to KGB blackmail. He was supposed to visit Moscow in 1987, but they stopped him and replaced him with Cecil Parkinson. The fear that Morrison could be targeted by foreign intelligence was aired in a 1988 letter from Sir Robin, now Lord Butler, who was then the cabinet secretary to the head of MI5, about a proposed ministerial visit to China. Under the heading confidential and personal, he wrote that the China trip could go ahead provided our ambassador in Beijing was also discreetly warned of risks, etc. But everywhere we go, people knew what was happening, but no action was taken. Now, we did speak to the inquiry this morning, but let's just remind viewers and listeners what the UK column has been talking about. So back in October 2018, we had this headline with Baroness Jay. We are setting an agenda for the ICSA Westminster inquiry. And the UK column was an agenda to manage the wealth of evidence that British politicians were involved in child abuse and that the government and its agents covered up that abuse, which is ongoing. So she said they were going to manage it. And we said, well, that's an orchestrated cover up. So let's move on. This is the latest. This is a statement that's come out of the inquiry. The inquiry wishes to make clear that the fact certain individuals will be named during this public hearing does not mean that the allegations against them are true. And this is the killer piece. This investigation is not examining the truth or otherwise of individual allegations. The inquiry is simply addressing issues of grave public concern. Mike, what are they doing? Because every way I come at this, if you are not investigating and trying to get to the truth, any report you subsequently produce has got to be built on sand.
No, of course, if you ask the average member of the public what an inquiry is for, it's for getting to the truth of a particular situation.
Yeah.
So for an inquiry to state clearly that it is not examining the truth or otherwise of a particular situation is quite staggering. On the other hand, you know, we have seen many inquiries over the years which have clearly been designed to cover up the truth and make sure that the truth never sees the light of day. Yeah. And that certainly seems to be yet more evidence that we have presented plenty of evidence up to now, but this is another example of it, that this inquiry is not fit for purpose. And in that sense, the £60 million is a waste of money. But Boris's point was, what good does an inquiry like this do for people today? Well, if the inquiry was doing its job, it does potentially do good for people today, because if you can take the lid of what happened from what's happened in the past, and you can get past people's cognitive dissonance that our MPs, people that they look up to potentially, are involved in this kind of thing, then of course that has a positive effect on today, because then perhaps we look at today's events and today's institutions in a slightly different light. This, of course, is guaranteed to make sure that that money is money wasted, and there's no such looking at what's going on today.
Yeah. Now, we were so amazed by this statement. This investigation is not examining the truth or otherwise of individual allegations. We did call the ICSA media team to see whether this is correct, and certainly that was the response we got. In pointing out that if you didn't investigate the truth, then what you were producing was simply nonsense and couldn't be relied upon. It went very quiet. But an interesting snippet was the lady who handled my questions was very polite. So the front end was fine. But basically, we learned that Tim Fortescue, the BBC clip of Tim Fortescue, Ted Heath's whip, saying that Tory MPs came to them with problems, such as little boys, and they fixed it so the MPs would do as they asked. That's blackmail. That clip has been shown to the inquiry, but presumably that's just a little bit of video. They're not interested in the truth. So we just end with this, really, that this was part of their original website, an overarching inquiry into allegations of child sexual abuse and exploitation involving people of public prominence associated with Westminster. Next steps. This is all nonsense. The other thing that has happened is that key people have simply been prevented from giving any testimony. So Melanie Shaw, they don't want to hear anything from Melanie. They don't want to hear anything from John Wedger. This is a cover up, Mike. I think this inquiry is now coming to the surface. We can see exactly what it is. If you don't hear the evidence, then there won't be a problem to investigate, will there? Well, what has happened to Melanie Shaw? Many people have been asking. We've had to be very careful because the court case is still ongoing. But I can tell you this, that Melanie is held in Rampton High Security Hospital. That's apparently under a Section 22 order. She's thus held without any rights. Basically, she's under the protection of the state. A further court hearing is due on the 2nd of April this year. No psychiatric reports were presented to the court at her trial, and the Section 22 that has got her into Rampton appears to have been obtained solely by HM Prison Style, which remains without a governor. So a lot of questions to be asked there. Not even her legal team know which ward she's on. And contrary to Rampton policy, Melanie is denied letters, phone calls and visits. And Rampton has returned a lot of letters that people have actually sent there. So Melanie, Mike, has simply been wiped off the face of the earth.
And this is what we warned would happen.
We warned this would happen. And of course, Melanie is one of the key whistleblowers whose testimony would cause immense problem for a lot of people. And it is just amazing that she's ended up under a Section 22 in Rampton at the very point at which the ICSA child abuse inquiry casually says, well, we're not going to investigate the truth. And Boris Johnson, I thought he looked rather flustered in that interview, Mike. Why should Boris Johnson be getting hot under the collar over what is or isn't happening with the child abuse inquiry? Is it me thinks he does protest too much, or is it that he's confused as to what's going on, or is that he worries about what could happen to some of his parliamentary colleagues? We'll end on the wry smile note of The Express, which has another tremendous article, Russia warning, Putin flexes military muscles in chilling threat to the West, that he's combat ready. And I find this just so fascinating. The Russians have the confidence to say, well, we have a military. It all works, Mike. Mm. But if we're living in the United Kingdom, we supposedly have military, which we absolutely know don't work at the moment due to the crass incompetence of our government and in particular the Ministry of Defence under Gavin Williamson.
Yes.
I wonder whether President Putin is... I don't think he'd be smiling on the subject of child abuse, but I think he would probably be nodding and saying, could he believe it of British politicians? And I think he would say, yes, I can believe it. Mm. We'll end there. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be back at the same time on
Friday.
Friday.
All right.
Bye-bye.